Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Good evening, folks, and welcome to another episode, episode 37, in fact, of Swinging from the Hip. So tonight, again, I'm back as your host, Aaron. We still don't know where Ashwin is. I assume the renovations were complete, but hey. So we've got Ben. I think we've got Paul in the background to keep us going and keep me in line. What are we going to talk about tonight? Well, we've got the India and Australia final test match going on over there in Brisbane, and just it looks like day four's come to an end due to some precipitation over there in Brisbane. Then we'll cover off the England-Sri Lanka test match, and then we'll go local. We've got the Super Smash happening. There was a game tonight between Central Districts and Otago, so we'll cover that off as well. But welcome in, Paul.
Getting in the way.
Yeah. Bit of precipitation happening already. But us Aucklanders love precipitation because we need plenty of it, apparently. We won't be able to make beer soon. We're running out of water, apparently. I don't, that could be a major catastrophe.
Major catastrophe. You can't make beer in Auckland.
yeah. State of emergency.
Oh, dear me. Anyway. Well, I've got my beer, so cheers, folks. Hope you're all having a wonderful start to your week. And, so where do you want to start? Are we starting off with the with Australia-India or with Sri Lanka-England?
I think we'll go to England and Sri Lanka because I haven't really seen much of it besides the schools and that. So I think we can cover that off. I think what happened there looks pretty simple to Indians. And that I'm not too sure. I presume the pitch conditions would have been suitable for spinners. However, what we did have in the first innings was the Sri Lankans getting routed by the English bowlers, and in particular Mr. Broad, who seemed to have the ball doing a few hoops. And from what I hear, some not too smart sort of shot making from the Sri Lankan batsman, and they were rolled pretty cheaply. There's about 150-odd, is that correct?
135 all out. But you also got to say, Dom Bess, the kind of off-spinner, all-rounder, he took 5 wickets for 30. Stuart Broad got 3 for 20. So, there was a bit of spin in the pitch, like you said.
Yeah. So, spin from ball one, day one. The same, pitch was obviously made neutral conditions, so that it suited both teams, not just favouring the home team, obviously. But then England came in and scored 421 odd, and we had Mr. Joe Root scoring a double century, which was the mainstay of the English innings, really.
It's an amazing scorecard. You got Joe Root 228 off 321 balls, so a decent lick as well. But then you've got Crawley for 9, Sibley for 4, Curran for 0, Best for 0, Leach for 4, Wood for 2, and then Stuart Broad not out on 11. But you got 6 batsmen there, initially 4 of them in the lower half of the order, but 6 batsmen there on single figures, and Joe Root on 228.
How did our favourite batsman go extras?
Only 13.
But he got into double figures, so that's a pretty good effort.
Well, true. Yes, I'd say better than seven of the batsmen.
Yeah. So I think Sri Lanka made a better fist of things in the second innings, but unfortunately couldn't get enough of a lead there in that second innings to trouble England, really. I think in the second innings we had about 359.
And as you say, talking about spinners, Jack Leach took 5 for 122, and Don Bass 3 for 100. So between those two, they got through 75 of the 137 overs. So they nearly half the overs were those two guys.
And obviously three quarters of the wickets as well.
And yes.
So, but a couple of the Sri Lankans did show a bit of fight this time around and put up some semi-decent scores, but obviously not quite enough. I think their lead once they were bowled out, was about 72, and England chased those down.
We need to tip our hats to a couple of the. I mean, as you say, the Sri Lankan batsmen made a real good fist of it in the second time round.
Yeah.
An opening stand opening partnership, 101, was a great way to start. Pereira making 62, and Thirumayin 111 there before Curran removed the top two. Clearly they're in for. Well, that's what their opening partnership was 37 overs, or nearly 38 overs. A really good one. Injuries is the big problem here, isn't it, for Sri Lanka?
Well, yeah, they did suffer a huge amount of injuries in South Africa, didn't they? But I thought they were mainly to the bowlers, but we did get a few of one or two of the injured players back again playing in this test match. Unfortunately, what it shows is that at the moment, Sri Lanka are just not, up at their best of form. They just still haven't got the players that are coming through performing at the moment for them and that. So, obviously maybe going through, what's the old famous term, going through a bit of a rebuild at this stage in their test format or one day format even, I think. So yeah, look, let's see what happens in the second test. They're obviously lacking bowlers as well, and as I said, maybe quality spin bowlers at the moment. They have lost Mr. Herath and a long time ago, obviously, Mr. Murali, and they haven't got the pace and the unique pace of Lasith and Malinga, and they've lost some very, accomplished and sort of classy batsmen in the form of Sangakkara and co. So they are, as we would say, in the rebuild phase. I think they're dependent a lot on Angelo Matthews. Is it the all-rounder there in that team? But he hasn't been bowling a bit, I think, through injury and that. Let's see how they go. England, obviously, one of the major forces in world cricket at the moment. They've got seemingly a lot of talent there and a lot of players that have come through, though you couldn't tell by that batting scorecard that they put together. If you take Joe Root out,
the second innings, they really a target of 74, and they lost Crawley for 8, Sibley for 2, and Root for 1. They made hard work of what was a very low total. I mean, all the damage was done in that first innings by Sri Lanka, let's be honest. But
unfortunately, that first innings for Sri Lanka left them in a deep hole, and it's very, very difficult to fight back from that sort of position.
On that second innings, then, actually in both innings, The bowling was opened by a slow left arm orthodox bowler in oh dear me, Lashley Mbuldenya.
Sounds good to me.
Yep, and I mean, as a so yeah, opening the bowling with a spinner, and you're trying to tell me this was a this was a pitch that was made for made even for both teams. I don't think so. This is.
Well, you didn't get my undertone, the sarcastic tone when I made those comments.
Now, look, you know, it was, as you say, well, yeah, and look, quite right too. That's the whole point of playing at home, right? Is you,
yeah,
is you make the wicket suit your players. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and maybe that's the way to try and unsettle opening batsmen, is give them a bit of spin which they're not used to seeing, and see how they go.
Yeah, I'm not saying New Zealand pitches are absolutely, neutrally done by our groundsmen. You know, they don't favour, they're not green at all, are they? And suit our swing seam bowlers.
Well, and look, one of the things we've been discussing, isn't it, is that New Zealand needs a spinner because, hey, they've been playing without a spinner for a lot of the test matches. And how is that going to cope when they go across to... if they went across to Sri Lanka, they would be in a... Wow. Yes.
Sri Lanka and India, they've got a test series, may possibly have it. We looked at last week after England, and then that after the... So, obviously we have got, there's AJS Patel who was missing this summer through injury and that, and we did have Mitch Satner come through and bowl his spin and that, but it was... My opinion differs a little bit from Taryn about the spinning abilities of the both of them.
The opportunities they get are few and far between, right? If you don't practice at 5-day cricket, how are you supposed to be able to learn how to play it?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And, that comes back to domestic cricket, doesn't it, in the 4-day competition that we play here and the pitches that are prepared and et cetera, and how much coaching and effort goes into these spinners and, how are they treated by the captains in the games and that. At the end of the, is it the last gasp thing after your seamers and fast bowlers about to go, yeah, mate, see if you can spin the ball and get this wicket for us, will you?
We've got an established partnership that have scored 150 runs. Please can you now break the partnership?
These guys are smashing us all over the place. Can you come in and break this partnership up? And by the way, you've only got 3 overs to do it in. And if you get smashed, you're out of here, But hey, look, it's a bit of a different subject to talk about, but which we can do. It's an interesting subject, and it'd be good to have maybe our two wizards here for that, Taryn and Taz, how it comes through.
We had a good show, and I'll put a link in the comments below afterwards. But we had a good show last year where Ashwin hosted, where the two of them talked about spin bowling and how to become a spin bowler, etc. So we'll put the link into that. But that talks about what we need to do to actually get more spin bowlers here in New Zealand. But as you say, comfortable win for England in that one, and we'll see how the second test goes.
I think there's only 2 test matches in that series anyway, thankfully. So hopefully it'll be a bit of a quick and painless games for Sri Lanka. Quickly get an injection in and they're out of there. Is it so nice to go, isn't it? I think Simon's just actually alerted us down there in the comments, isn't he, that there's a few international cricket features. So we've got a busy week ahead in that cricket this week, obviously with Australia and India, last day wrap up tomorrow, but there's, what have we got, Bangladesh and West Indies, Ireland and Afghanistan, and Pakistan versus South Africa. So that's great to see all that cricket going on all around the world in these times, isn't it?
No, absolutely. And don't forget, folks, to join me at 7 a.m. every single morning for the morning sports briefing. And we'll keep you up to date with all of the results from those games during the week. So I say that's 7 a.m. every single morning for the morning sports briefing, and we'll keep you up to date with how the Bangladesh West Indies series goes, Ireland, Afghanistan, and also Pakistan, South Africa, and all the other top level cricket as and when it happens. Initially the Bangladesh West Indies are playing a one day international series, as are Afghanistan and Ireland. Obviously we've got the second test from England, Sri Lanka coming up before. And then also we've got the one days between New Zealand and Australia on the 26th of Jan. Oh, that's postponed. Sorry, wrong one. That's not there anymore.
No. We got T20s, I think. Australia, I think, are due to come over here for 5 T20s. So, and then obviously...
That's in February, though. Yeah, towards the end of February. Yeah, that's agree. So, yeah, but we do also have the Pakistan South Africa Test Series coming up as well later this month.
That's Pakistan South Africa. That's in Pakistan. From, is that series over there, or is it... Is that... Say there, Paul. Is there a bit of homework?
Gaffey Stadium Lahore will be hosting the first T20. So yes, that's actually in Pakistan.
So that'll be interesting, isn't it? It's I know who else has been there recently. Was it to Pakistan? Was it Bangladesh? I can't remember now. But in terms of South Africa, that's one of the major teams going to Pakistan since a very, very, very long time. So that'll be a good, interesting watch over there.
Yeah, we'll have to get Taz on to let us know what, because the first test is in Karachi and the second one in Rawalpindi. He'll be able to give us an idea as to what those two pitches are like. We'll try and get some Taz to do that. That might come out as a New Zealand Sports Radio special for supporters of the channel. You can become a supporter by going to patreon.com/NZ Sport Radio and become a supporter there. And perhaps I'll have a chat with, I'll try and set up a chat with Taz to have a chat about those, about the pictures in Pakistan and what can be expected coming forward as a supporter special.
It'll be really interesting to see that series as well and maybe give us a bit of an idea how to watch Pakistan perform against South Africa there, just to see how, give us a comparison from when they toured here and how, we played against them. Just give us a bit of a sort of a lineup, see a bit of a comparison between the three countries and see how things stack up there. Should we move on to, what everybody's been watching and have their eyes on is the Australia-India Test Series. And as we go into the final test in Brisbane, and we've got tomorrow, which is the final day in the whole series, the Gavaskar Border Trophy, is dependent on day 5 of the test match. And, what a great way this is going to be to end the series. Been a great test series between India, Australia and India. India have obviously been through a bit of a mill getting here, and they performed to me, as I covered off Karen and we did last show, admirably, obviously, in that third test with all the injuries and that they've suffered. And again, obviously, with completely sort of new bowling lineup that they brought into this last test match with all the injuries and that. The new bowlers really, to me, performed really well in both the innings that Australia have batted, and their bowlers have stood out, and looks like India are building a bit of depth in that department, and especially these young bowlers like that are bowled like Thakur and Sundar. I love this name, but called, don't you? Washington Sundar, the spinner, hey? Okay? How's an Indian get a name called Washington? Can anyone explain this to me?
I'm not the right person for that. But they,
Sorry, yeah, but we'll move on. So we've had Siraj there, and I've forgotten the third seamer's name. Old age, you know, memory's going. But these young fellas, you know, with the inexperience they've had and bowling in a different country, different wicket, pitch conditions, etc., they've done really well. And obviously, copping a little bit of Australian commentary from the sidelines as well, which, you know, you get in Australia, it's part and parcel of touring Australia, that is. So it's an introduction to test matches in Aussie, as one would say. But, hey, they've done a great job. And, you know, even in this second innings where they bowled Australia out just before stumps today, you know, where we've got Australia set a total of 320.
So let's talk about Australian first innings. So, I mean, pretty much went as I think we've seen quite a lot of this series, in the fact there's only really three batsmen for Australia that are performing. You've got Manus Labuschagne, who I can never say pronounce it properly. Please do that for me.
Manus Labuschagne.
He performed again with 108. Steve Smith obviously did well last test, didn't really perform in the first two tests, though, did he? Tim Payne with 50. But again, as soon as Tim Payne got out, they were, 6 for 311 at that point. You're thinking, okay, this is a pretty big score is going to be here. But then they're all out for 369. So they lose four wickets for the addition of just 58 runs. You'll say, well, yeah, that tail didn't wag, did it? We see that again in the second innings. But I mean, that's been their story, isn't it? They've got three batsmen playing at the moment, really, for Australia. 369,
decent enough score, isn't it? If you look at through the test series here, not from both sides, you know, none of the batsmen really have dominated, you know, besides Labuschagne and Smith. And like you say, Labuschagne and Smith, and particularly Smith, has only come into his own in the last two test matches. Before that, you know, he didn't score any runs. Basically, it was relying on Labuschagne to score the runs, wasn't it? India haven't had their normal, you know, batting guys stand up and be counted or make centuries. Yet, you know, Pujara is the guy they expect to be the wall, as they say, the rock, who's meant to stay there for hours and hours on end while the others score runs. But that hasn't happened. So what
you've... True, but you've got, but if we look at the Indian side, you've got Jadeja, Thakur, Sundar, Pant, Gill, Sharma, Rahane. You've got seven players averaging over 40. Now, okay, some of those players only play one test, etc., but so they haven't actually scored a lot. Compare that to Australia. I've got three batsmen who are averaging over 40. India's, at least the Indian batsmen, they've all chipped in to a greater or lesser degree. You've only got Labuschagne, Smith, and Payne who are averaging over 40. Everyone else is below that. So you've got to say, it's much more collective. Indian performance, as you say, about that depth, about this, having to cope with injuries, having to cope with a changing lineup, and they're doing this. There's definitely a team atmosphere there amongst that side.
And that's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, obviously Kohli, who was the great name of Indian cricket, and the be all end all of Indian cricket, as a lot of Indian cricket fans would adhere to. But, you know, he played in the first test and that was it. He had to go home. Well, he went home. And then what you've had is you've had Ajinkya Rahane step in as captain. And what you, like you said, it's a collective effort, isn't it? He's got a totally different way of captaining and that, but the way the management and him as captain has brought this team together, and they've all gelled, how they've gelled to perform as a team. Sort of like the Black Caps, isn't it? Where the team is team performance is more important than the individual, and that doctrine, you know, was brought in by Brendan McCullum, and which has been personified by our captain Kane Williamson, you know, the underspoken, under the table guy, comes in under the radar, but is, you know, in himself the standout achiever of the team. But you know, it's, you know, he won't mention him, but it's the team, and this is what's happened. You know, it looks like it's happened in the Indian team. You know, there is no superstar.
Quick quiz question for you then: how many players have India used in the 4 Test matches?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, that's a very good question. I would assume about 17 or 18.
20.
20?
20 players in the 4 Test matches. And how many do you think have played all 4?
You know, that number popped into my head when you first asked, and I should have gone with it, didn't it? I should have gone with it.
I mean, 20, that's an incredible number, basically, really, can you think about it? And only 2 players have played in all 4 tests. Can you name them?
Pujara?
Yep.
Rahane?
And that's it. Yep. Everyone else, no one else has played all 4 tests. So just those 2 guys have played all 4 tests. Yeah, which again comes back to it has to be a collective, it has to be a team effort. You can't be. Amazing that India is still in this test series.
Yeah.
You take 9 players out of the New Zealand test team.
We could be called up, Paul.
I'm not. That's what basically they've done. They've taken 9 players out of their test team, and they're still fielding a side. So, imagine that the New Zealand team with the 9 players missing.
Australia, you know, just imagine that to Australia. You take Stark, Cummings, Hazelwood, Lyon out of their bowling attack, right? These are the guys who've been menacing right through. And I mean, if you look from both sides, the bowlers have been the guys that have been outstanding from both teams, isn't it? But, you know, if you listen to the Aussie commentators when you're watching it, Mr. Warne, Gilchrist, et cetera, you know, when you've got Cummings, Stark and Hazelwood, you know, these are the greatest bowlers on earth, the best attack in the world, including Lyon. Nathan Lyon, you take those guys out, and who are the replacements for Aussie?
Well, you look at Aussie. I mean, Aussie sort of have used 14 players.
Yeah, only that's 6 bowlers. Through injury, it's not forced. It wasn't forced apart. Maybe in the first test when David Warner was out for the first 3 with his groin injury, maybe.
On the bowling, they've only used 6 bowlers, right? One of those is Lavashang with 10 overs, and Green with 41. Essentially, it's been Hazelwood, Cummings, Stark, and Leon have taken all the wickets and bowled all the overs. As you say, they've had a much more steady team. They haven't had the issues India have had. They should be winning this series quite comfortably.
Yeah, look, and I agree with that comment wholeheartedly. Absolutely, you know, they definitely should be. It's, you know, that'd be similar to taking Bolt, Southee, and say Wagner out of New Zealand bowling attack, isn't it? Basically, that's the stability, the stableness that you form, isn't it? So Aussie has had that.
Whereas India have used 11 bowlers.
I mean, you look at
who's two of them. Sharma only bowled one ball, to be fair. Mohammed Sami 17. So you take those off, and you take them off like I took off 2 bowlers from Australia. And basically, they've used 9 bowlers rather than 4. Who is the 7th or the 8th pace bowler for New Zealand? that's what India are playing with, and they are competing against the number one the number one side in the Test Championship currently.
Are they number one? Are they number one?
Test Championship, not the world rankings.
So yeah, no, look, yeah, absolutely correct there.
To wrap things up. India's a team effort. They've used a lot more players, really, it's a fantastic performance that they're putting in, considering the difficulty they're going through.
And it's going to be a really interesting last day, isn't it? Going into that final day.
So team effort: Sharma with 40, Sundar with 62, and Thakur with 67. When those two were in there for that seventh wicket partnership, they went from 186 to 309, and that partnership between them probably could have saved the series between Sundar and Thakur.
Absolutely, and those are the most, you know, I think Washington Sundar was, I've got to say Washington, I love saying that. you know, he's a guy on test debut, isn't he? And Thakur is inexperienced, and the way they batted, you know, when Aussie got the breakthrough and these two guys came, and I bet they were rubbing their hands going, oh, yep, this is it. We're going to wrap this up pretty easily. But these two guys just battled away, you know. They had plays and misses, you know, and that, which you do, you know, you've got to have a bit of luck go your way. There was some balls that flew off the edges and went flying over the slips, through the slips, etc. But, hey, that's all part of the game, isn't it? And you take your luck when it comes. And this is, you know, they really, to me, played really well there. And then, obviously, once Thakur was out, I was watching this part of the game, and Washington didn't have much confidence in his three mates at all. So he started having a bit of a swing. I think the inexperience told out at that stage. He wasn't sure what to do. I mean, with one of the, I think the last, you saw the last two guys in your tail, basically, and it's a tail, you know. There was, I can't remember, was it Sani or Siraj? I think it was Sani. He's got a first class average of 2. And with one of the shots he played, if they'd actually run the 2 that he could have got, you know, he would have been matching his first class average and his test average.
Probably Natarajan then, who's the number 11. But
Natarajan,
But basically, we're saying two bowling all rounders saved India here. And whilst we're here, I'll let you talk about the wonderful fact that Simon's given us around how Washington got his name.
Thanks, Simon, for mentioning that in the chat room there. So Simon Hughes with how Washington got his name is because his father was sponsored by a man named P.D. Washington to play cricket. So there you go.
A bit like that incident during the – or that player who played for Samoa who called himself Paddy Power because of the sponsored by the betting company.
Hey, look, it's fantastic, isn't it? And, hey, as always, appreciate Simon's comments and for him tuning in and always watching us. And it's good to have our one fan, Paul.
Our top fan.
Our top fan, that's it.
That's how you put it. That got India to a near. Australia's second innings. Mohammad Siraj with 5 wickets there, removing danger men, including Labuschagne, Smith, in there.
It was a really solid bowling effort from India. You know, Aussie got a good opening partnership there through Warner and Harris, and you thought, you know, Australia are going to get away here because the runs were coming pretty quickly, but the Indian bowlers kept chipping away, kept knocking the Aussies over. You know, no one really picked up a score of any note there. But mainly in their 30s, I think, and that the top, you know, all the scores and that. So really well done to the Indian bowlers for sticking in there and just chipping away. And, you know, at one stage, once you had Smith and Labuschagne out, you were basically into the Aussie tail, weren't you?
Well, we kind of, yeah. But you've got to say, you play, obviously, that start, obviously, with Harrison Warner, 38, 48.
Yeah.
Labuschagne, 25. Steve Smith, 55. Again, two guys in form who've got themselves in. You think they're going to go on to get big scores.
Yeah.
Cameron Green, 37, off 90 balls. Come on, you've played yourself in. Again, should be going on to score a big score. Tim Payne, yeah. 27 off. And then Pat Cummins got stranded there, losing partners when he got scored 28. But you've got five or six batsmen there who've got themselves in, and you think they should be going on to score big scores, or at least one of them needs to, and they failed.
Yeah, it should be. And, you know, even though the pitch is, you know, it's a fourth-day pitch, you can start to see the cracks come through into the pitch, and, you know, you're getting a bit of up and down play in the ball in the cracks. But from what I can see, it's still, you know, you can still score runs there. The batsmen still can still play. We didn't quite get two overs in at the end of the two overs before the rain came in. I think we got 1.5 there where India were batting. And, you know, you saw a lovely push through the covers from Rohit Sharma, and he's going to be one of the keys for India in this second inning, whether they chase this total or how they play it, depending on weather conditions, obviously, and that tomorrow, plus how the pitch plays, you know. Obviously, the covers were out on the ground pretty quickly, but it is in Brisbane. So is there some humidity, some sweating under those covers? Is there going to be a bit of moisture getting underneath? Who knows, you know, and how the pitch is going to play on that final day.
A target of 324 with humidity in hand. India, if you look at how India played in the last test when they were, which they batted to save the test to draw, they were with a good shout of winning that one at one point, chasing a big total. They'll go for it. Initially, they'll go for it, and then if they lose three or four quickly, then they'll dig in. But for my mind, they'll start the day thinking they can win this game.
Yeah, and look, I think the way they bowled in the second innings shows that that they are, you know, being positive and going for the win. If you look at it, they were only looking to draw this game. And obviously, if they draw the game, then it's a drawn series and they retain the Border Gavaskar trophy. If I was a captain, I would have been setting some defensive field. I would have been telling my bowlers to bowl wide down the leg side or pull off, you know, pull down the offside or, you know. And but when you had the likes of Stark and Cummings and Hazelwood batting, I would have told my bowlers to go for it and see if you can hit them a few times. You know, cause a bit of injury and damage on those bowling hand or, you know, arm or whatever. Yeah, hey, but I'm a bit of a mean, ruthless bugger, which may not be very PC in these days and that. But hey, look, but you know, to me, it's, you know, it's a test match and it's called a test match for a reason. So, you know, if you want to be, yeah, to me, yeah, I'm. You sort of question the Indian, you know, a little bit of the, you know, the thinking, but obviously they want to play it in a positive frame of mind. When you had, you know, the Cummings and those guys in, as I said, you want to slow it down and squeeze out as many overs as you can so that your batsmen have got less overs to play and things like, you know. But again, you know, it looks like they want to go for the win there, and they have chased down. I think I heard the commentary team saying a couple of times in the last few test series that they've played 300 in the second innings. So, you know, look, all it needs is Sharma and Rishabh Pant to come off and score a couple of, you know, both of them to get hundreds or one of them, you know, both of them, especially Rohit Sharma, who can score big and quick, him to come off. And you don't know what's going to happen on that last day. So it's going to be really intriguing and going to be a good watch. I think play will start, I think New Zealand time about, is it about 1 o'clock or rough 12:30? Well, I may start off earlier because of the rain. So, we'll see, get quick info on tomorrow, and in the background on my desktop at work. And see how we go. I may have to rush home an early day, not feeling too well.
People aren't back buying houses yet. You're fine. You've got there's nothing for you to do for the next this week.
You wouldn't believe it. Black tick day and already poor.
Maybe Wednesday, Thursday, you might have to start organising a couple of open homes for the weekend, but that's pretty much it.
No open homes this weekend. I've got a 40th on Saturday night.
That's right. So you host, you do the open homes on Saturday, not Sunday morning.
Earlier in the day is cricket, don't forget.
Oh, jeez. Some people might actually think you're actually supposed to earn some money at some point. Anyway.
Don't tell the wife.
So, fascinating day. If you can, sit yourself in front of the telly, because, that's going to be a fantastic run chase from India. I'll go for it. And should be a cracking day's cricket tomorrow in that final test match.
And I tell you what, with the weather and the heat and the humidity, no better place than to watch it than at the pub and with a few beers and mates around you, isn't it?
Now you're trying to get everyone to not look. We can't have the productivity of New Zealand diminished because watching a bit of an Indian, Australian Indian test match. Anyway.
Right. I think we better move on.
A bit of domestic cricket then. So Wellington kicked off the weekend well with wins for both the Blaze and the Firebirds over Otago. Then on Friday we saw Canterbury playing Northern Districts, and both their sides, the Kings and the Magicians, got wins in those ones before they backed up and played Wellington in the next one. This was a cracking one. So Wellington, Canterbury Kings versus the Wellington Firebirds. Canterbury Kings giving the Wellington Firebirds their first loss of the season.
And our mate Finn Allen finally sort of failed, didn't he? I think he scored 27 pretty rapidly, but obviously Wellington being reliant on him to put up some big scores, and he didn't do it this time for them. And their other New Zealand international, our new man, Mr. Devin Conway, didn't score many. But was an interesting game because Mr. Jimmy Neesham, the Wellington all-rounder and Black Caps all-rounder, had a very interesting encounter in one of the overs. I didn't see the game, unfortunately, because we were obviously playing on Saturday. But suffered a bit of an injury. It was a broken... Was it dislocated or broken finger, Paul, when the ball got smashed straight back at him and it hit his little finger, I think, and didn't look very nice from what I saw on the news anyway when they showed the little pinky.
Neesham made 49, but Bracewell retired hurt for 31. Sure wasn't Bracewell that got...
Because on TV they were showing Neesham. And interviewed him.
I say retired hurt for retired, not out, shall I say. It doesn't say retired hurt, but
this was when Jimmy Neesham was bowling.
Oh, bowling. So in the first innings, Neesham got 49 and Bracewell 31. That was a key partnership. When Bracewell retired hurt, you've got to say that was they immediately lost Gibson straight afterwards. They went suddenly from 4 for 108 to 7 for 100. Basically, they've made 154. But yeah, I think him losing him was a big thing. And obviously, he wasn't available to bowl. Neesham bowled fine in the second innings. But I'm not sure who he got. So he bowled three overs, 3.4 overs. So he was bowling at the death as well at the end of the game. So Neesham was must have got his finger put back in and was happy to carry on bowling.
Interesting. Because I know that on the news I've said, and what I've read is that he's had to have, because of the injury, he'll miss the rest of the competition and be out for a month, but should be available for the Australian T20 series when the Aussies get here. So, maybe one of our interweb viewers or people out there might be able to update us better on that, on what happened exactly. Just before we carry on a bit there, Paul, I have just asked you a question, the scheduling from New Zealand cricket.
Yep.
Friday night, and there's no cricket on. 7 o'clock. The game was played earlier in the day. What's going on there? Surely Friday night, 7 o'clock is prime time viewing.
There was a game. It was the women's game. They just played the men's game first, and the women's game was at 10 past 7. So they just switched them around, give the women some exposure.
But what's that? It wasn't even on TV. Spart Sport.
They didn't broadcast it.
No. Well, so as I say, Friday night prime time 7 o'clock viewing. You put a game on and you don't broadcast it. What's that about?
Well, clearly that's poor. If that's what happened, I wasn't watching it. I don't have Spark Sports, so I wasn't watching it. But
I don't. I don't either. But
there was a 7 o'clock game, and just they have been switched. They have decided to switch some of them around, where the men's game is earlier in the day and the women's game is later in the day. So I think that's fine. I just think it'd be wrong with them switching them around, but I do think, as you say, if you're going to have a 7 p.m. game on a Friday, you should be showing it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry about that. As I say, I do question it. I mean, obviously, and there was a game on this afternoon between CD and Central District, and Otago Vaults. There was a women's game earlier in the day and a women's game. But on a Monday, and you're back, everyone basically back to normal and back to work.
Yeah, a bit strange not having that one at 7 p.m.
It was live streamed.
Kira Parks got the floodlights or not? That might be the
only thing. It hasn't, but it was live streamed. But again, it wasn't on Spark Sport or anything like that. So, but scheduling a game for Monday during the day,
there's no reason. Look. Spark Sport are a different broadcaster to Sky. Now, Sky has channels, right?
Yeah.
So they try and schedule things into various channels, whereas Spark are a pure streaming service. So they can actually have four or five games at the same time. They don't really have channels per se. They just put on shows that you can watch either live or on demand. And they don't have to worry about scheduling per se, because they don't have to finish one show before another show starts, or finish one game before another game starts. So, there's no reason why they can't put two games on at the same time, or things like that. So, or if you wanted to say, look, so put the men's game on first and women's game on second in one location, switch them around to the other location. People who want to watch the women's cricket, watch the women's cricket, and men back to back, and one who want to watch the men's cricket, watch men's cricket back to back. There's no reason why they can't have games on at the same time.
Hey, but let's get back to the actual games and
I say the Canterbury Kings, the fantastic win over the Wellington Fibers really has ignited, really has added interest to that, the men's side of things. On the women's side of things, the Blaze beat the Canterbury Magicians by 7 wickets in that one. We then went up to Auckland when I was at this the Eden Park Outer Oval for the Hearts versus the Spirit. Really good game. Hearts did a really good bowling effort to reduce the Spirits to 79 for 9 off their 20 overs. Really interesting tactics by the Spirit. For the first 8 overs, no bowler bowled more than 1 over before getting changed.
Yeah.
Which was some interesting tactics there. Really just to unsettle the batsmen, so they couldn't get into a rhythm against the bowler. And it was in the balance until the 15th over, where I think it was 13 runs were scored off that over, and that pretty much decided the game in the end.
Yeah, I think it was the, and in the end, it was the partnership between Holly Huddleston and Maddie. Arlene Kelly?
Perkins.
Perkins. That's right. Sorry. Yeah, Katie Perkins, wasn't it?
You could do that, or you could actually say, actually, you know, it actually really came down to Prasad's bowling, and she broke the key partnership between Gurney and Leighton Davis. It was a second or third over, and she took like three wickets in that over. But she broke the partnership. She got out the other person who was set, she put herself on a hat trick ball for the following over. Got changed ends and unfortunately bowled a wide, I think it was, for her hat trick ball. That was her third over where she took those three wickets. She got player of the match from breaking that partnership. And that kind of derailed the Northern Spirit innings, losing those wickets.
Yep, they did. And, you know, I mean, the Northern Spirit had a really good start when the Hearts were batting. They picked up some, you know, those couple of early wickets.
Nishan Patel came on, a spin bowler to open the bowling. Yeah. Which again, another tactic to unsettle the batsman. She took two wickets in her first over. She came back on in the fifth over and took another wicket as well. As I say, they were switching the bowlers around to unsettle the batsman. I had a quick chat with Nishan Patel after the game. Nishan Patel, I think it's after the game. So check out that interview over on New Zealand Sports Radio Facebook page. But she had a cracking, because not only did she take those three wickets, but she also scored 17 off 15 balls, a little sort of cameo innings towards the end of the Northern Spirit innings to kind of give them something to bowl at, definitely.
Yeah, it was, I saw a fair bit of that game, and it was really an interesting game. It could have, you know, if the Hearts didn't get that partnership between, partnership going then, you know, and that was broken early, then it would have been really interesting as far as I can see. But isn't it interesting, though, in the women's cricket, they seem to use the spin bowlers a lot more, you know, the slower bowlers. They really seem to make an impact on the game. Whereas, you know, obviously the pace bowlers do too, to a certain degree, but the spinners seem to have a bigger impact, as far as I can see, on the game and the tactics and that around it is really interesting.
Right, in T20, we talk about the spin bowlers taking the pace off the ball, making it harder to get those boundaries. And let's be honest, one of the differences between the women's game and the men's game is the power of the bats of the bats persons. The women just don't have the power to get to those boundaries. A number of things play into that. I think the level of professionalism in the women's game as well, they don't get paid as much, so they have as much time to prepare as well, etc. And that's where I've gone blank as to the superstar of women's cricket that fit here in New Zealand.
Sophie Devine.
I mean, that's what sets her apart, I think, from all the others. She can easily reach the boundary, whereas a lot of the other batsmen can't. And that's, so if you take the pace off the ball, and you already know that batsmen are struggling to hit the boundaries, you're gonna, it's going to be tough for them to kick their own weight.
Yeah. Another thing you can see that in the men's game too, when you watch the Big Bash in Australia or the IPL and those other leagues. You know, even in the Caribbean League, and the spin bowlers do, you know, even in the men's game, can have a resounding effect on the game, you know, and they are a big component and a big part of it. You know, even domestically here, you can see it with some of the spinners and that they do make a huge impact on on the game and how they can change things around. So,
yeah. Also, I think there's also I some comments in that I heard, obviously being at the game, from some of the people who follow the game quite a lot, obviously sat in the media area, and was that you tend to see quite a lot of runouts in the women's game as well, and the fact that have the women trained to run between the wickets better or well. As the game becomes more professional, as the game as they get more training, these things will improve. But yeah, I think not only do you have the pace issue, to take the ball for the ball, but then you're going to force people to make run to run between the wickets. The running between the wickets perhaps isn't as practiced and as well judged in the women's game. So yeah, again, you're opening up another way of getting wickets if you're forcing people to run between the wickets.
And I guess that, you know, again, like you mentioned, the resources that go into the women's game, with the men's game, you've got the trainers and all these guys, haven't you, teaching them how to run and, you know, do the running between the wickets and that, you know. So are they getting the advantage, you know, are they getting the same resources provided to them so that this sort of stuff is, you know, at all levels, I'm saying, because obviously, you know, you're going to get it up at the top level, but is that coming down through the provinces and that?
And also another thing, I mean, one of the things we talk about when we talk about things like USA Rugby, for example, they've got the athletes, but they haven't played rugby since they were knee high to a grasshopper. So have the women been playing netball or other sports? Have they actually got the 10,000 hours of game time that the men do? Because there are more male kids teams of a higher quality there as well. Obviously, room for growth, room for improvement. Crack it. I really enjoyed it. It was in the balance until that 15th over in the second innings. Perkins took it away, and she scored a 52. And congratulations to her. Yeah, great. I think it was also I can't remember how many games for Auckland as well. It was a milestone for her. I've got to go blank as to how many it was, but yeah. So she had a cracking game on that milestone.
She's been around with the Hearts for a long time, and I mean at least the Hearts can, you know, go up to the Aces, the Auckland men's team, and go, where are you guys on the table? We're second. They're over 500 boys. Well, that's good.
Well, let's just talk about we'll have a quick chat. I was there for the beginning of the Northern Knights versus the Auckland Aces game. It was rain interrupted from the start. It was coming down heavy. I had a 2-hour drive home, and I just went, forget this. I'm out of here. I'm not going to watch grass grow. They did eventually get a game, but it was absolutely ruined by the rain. Auckland's innings was reduced to 14 overs, and then the Northern, with further rain interruptions, the Northern Knights was reduced to 10 overs, and they made it home with a ball to spare, scoring 109 off their 5 overs. Auckland scored 140 off their 14 overs. Once you get rain interrupted games like this, it becomes a much harder watch, I'll be honest.
It's a bit of a lottery, isn't it? And, you know, I mean, I must admit I was flicking channels because we were watching a bit that other sport that was on the TV out in the harbour, which was providing a bit more excitement.
As they crashed their boats, yes. Did you spend 5 hours watching the salvage operation?
And let's admit it, some of us not so hardcore sailing people or boat people were just watching, you know, we watch these things crashes, don't we?
So the Northern Knights won that, as you say, a bit of a lottery. And then today it has been a bit of a lottery by looking things down in Pukekura Park as well. The Hinds
I don't think it was that much. There was a rain break, but I don't think it was as a huge lottery as the Aces and Knights game. And you know, Actually, I don't think
the eight... So the Central Hinds were reduced to 17 overs. Then the after more rain delay, the Sparks only had an eight over target to aim at.
Oh, so, okay. Sorry, you're talking about the ladies' game up.
The ladies' one's a bit of a mess. And then the men, so yeah, so and the Hinds won that one by 6 runs in the end via DLS method. So good luck if you can figure that one out. The men's game was reduced, both innings were reduced to 17 overs. So yeah, so when it's an even number of overs, as you say, it's a bit less of a lottery, and also 17 overs as well.
Yeah. It's nearly a full game. And from what I saw of the, I didn't see the Otago innings, but I did. They were live streaming it again, as I mentioned before. So I was able to, before we came on air, it was being played. I watched, and the old veteran Ross Taylor came through for Central and saw the team through. So Central won that, and I think that puts them up into second place in the men's competition behind the Firebirds, but they've played one game more.
Current, actually, oh, hang on, just quickly check that. So maybe I've not refreshed the table, which might be what's currently now the Firebirds, the Stags, and the Kings are all on 20 points, so just run rate separating them.
Yeah,
massive gap back to the Vaults on 8 points. So the Vaults, Northern Knights, and Auckland Aces are out of it, let's be honest.
The Northern Knights still have an opportunity to get through to that top four.
Really?
Outside chance. I think they have to win all their games and a few of the results possibly. Well, if they
won 2 games and lost 5, they're out of it. It would be a major turnaround for them.
Is that up to date, Paul?
Yes.
Okay.
So it'd be a major turnaround for the Northern Knights to make it. But yeah, look, it's Firebirds, Stags, and Kings at the top there, and they're all going well. On the women's side, the Wellington Blaze are top with 2 points clear of the Auckland Hearts. The Magicians in 14 points, a bit further back there in that one. The Spirit, who have played one more game than everybody else, are on 12 points, so even further back. So again, Spirit probably in with a shout in the women's one, but looks like the Blaze, Hearts, and Magicians probably going to be part of it at the end.
Yeah, and I think the Wellington team are most likely the favourites for the women's competition. Anyway, they're the standout team, and the others are just playing for second place, really, I would think. So looks like, folks, we're coming to the end of the show. We've done another hour. Wow, time flies when you're having fun, isn't it? But I'm just having a quick nosy while I'm can, so I'm not sure how to share these things, but as Simon's pointed out in our comments there, that it is a top three system or a playoff system as far as the men's competition goes. So look, it'll be interesting. Obviously Firebirds, Central Districts, the Canterbury's, whatever they call themselves, and the Otago team, they're all in the top. That should be the top four for that competition. So it'll be interesting how we go there. But it's been another great show again, where I think, Paul, I think we've pretty much summarised things off, and probably we'll look forward to another show next Monday.
At 8 p.m.
Monday night, at 8 p.m. on Swinging from the Hip. So until then, everybody out there, just go out there and, hey, remember tomorrow's a good day to try and pull maybe a sickie, you know, do a bit of work in the morning and get away in the afternoon and get in front of the TV and watch that final day of the Aussie-India game.
The Aussie-India game looks like a cracking final day. Don't forget, if you want to keep up with all of that cricket action that Simon mentioned earlier, all those different series will give you joy. Join us on the morning sports briefing. You can also listen to it as a podcast, folks, just search New Zealand Sports Radio on your favourite podcatcher, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, all those wonderful places. Tomorrow night at 8 p.m., we've got the Driving Moors show. It's our rugby show. And hopefully, the plan is, cross fingers, on Thursday evening at 8 p.m., we will have our very first A-League / Wellington Phoenix show. Yes, looking at expanding the our shows. Also, I just clicked on the wrong thing and closed the window I wanted to open, which doesn't help me because also I will be at next weekend. I'm going to be at the at Eden Park on Saturday for that's not right. Where is the yeah, Saturday for at Eden Park for the Auckland Hearts versus Central Hinds and Auckland Aces versus Central Stags on Saturday the 23rd. So if you guys are thinking of if you're going to be at Eden Park, then do say hello and say I'll be obviously in the hat covering those games, getting some post game interviews, as long as there's no rain, of course.
Yeah, well, you can never tell. We do live in Auckland.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.